Hi, I'm Riley Fessler. I'm a podcast producer here at the DSR Network, which means that my job is to make sure that we have great content and great guests across all of our shows. Our programming is supported by our members, and for that, we are truly grateful. I hope that you'll consider becoming a member to support the work that we do. Members receive an ad-free listening experience, bonus content for nearly all of our shows, early access to episodes, enhanced show notes, and access to our exclusive DSR Slack and Discord communities. Membership is just $7 per month or $70 per year. To become a member, please visit thedsrnetwork.com/buy. That's thedsrnetwork.com/buy. Thank you very much for your support.
This is the Daily Blast from the New Republic, produced and presented by the DSR Network. I'm your host, Greg Sargent. If you pay cursory attention to national politics these days, you've probably heard someone say we're in the middle of a racial realignment. The idea is that Donald Trump is showing surprising strength among non-white voters, especially working-class ones, and that this helps explain why the head-to-head polling looks so rough for President Biden right now. There's no denying that Biden remains behind in at least some polls. But political analyst Ron Brownstein has written an important new piece for CNN on the racial realignment thesis that adds some sorely needed nuance to the discussion. In short, Brownstein finds that the flip side to Trump's strength among non-whites is that Biden is doing better than you might expect among white voters. This casts some doubt on the significance of the alleged racial realignment and has all sorts of interesting implications for our politics in many other ways. So we invited Ron onto the show to discuss all of it. Welcome, Ron.
Hey, Greg. Good to be with you.
Okay, so let's walk through the first part of your argument. You looked at four recent national polls and found Trump winning from 20 to 28% of black voters and 45% to 48% of Hispanic voters. That's way higher than the 12% of black voters and 32% of Hispanic voters he won in 2020. Before we get to your other findings, let's just talk about this. I mean, these kinds of numbers have people claiming that there is a major racial realignment happening. And look, there's no doubt about it. If Trump got close to those numbers in actual voting, it would be seismic, right? Can you put that in historical context for us?
Yeah, I mean, you know, right now, we're talking about not only in those four national polls from earlier this month that I cited specifically in my story, but three more that came out this week, a Fox, Quinnipiac, and CNBC national poll, plus almost all of the major state polls in the swing states that have come out in the last couple months. We are talking about Trump at this point, 7 months from the election, polling better among black and Hispanic voters than any Republican presidential nominee or incumbent president in the post-civil rights era. I mean, you have to go back to Eisenhower and his numbers among black voters, or maybe Nixon in 1960 and his numbers among black voters. I mean, Trump, you know, we're talking better among Hispanics than George W. Bush and better among black voters than Ronald Reagan. And, you know, there's a lot of debate. I mean, there are Democratic pollsters who focus on minority communities who question the accuracy of these numbers. I am not so much in that camp. I mean, these findings have been incredibly consistent across polls, but also consistent within polls, Greg, in the sense that, you know, not only is Trump's vote number higher than it was in 2020, but Biden's approval is substandard among minority voters relative to what you would expect for a Democratic president. The share of minority voters, black and Hispanic voters, who say that Biden's policies have helped them is, you know, a dangerously low for a Democrat. The share who say the economy was better under Trump is ominously high for a Democrat. So I think there's a lot of internal consistency around these numbers. And for that reason, I don't think the right question is whether they are precisely capturing the magnitude of Trump's inroads among black and Hispanic voters. I think the right question is whether whatever level Trump is at today, whether he can sustain it for seven more months, as these voters learn more about the kinds of things that he's running on.
Right. I think you allude there to what I think is a split among senior Democratic strategists on this. I mean, you have some questioning the findings based on small sample sizes, and then you have others who acknowledge these numbers are picking up something real, though they question the magnitude of it. I tend to agree with you and come down on the latter side of that. It seems like it's real to me, at least right now.
It sure feels real right now. I mean, like, we're talking about a lot of polls, you know, in both national polls and state polls done by a lot of different pollsters. And I know that there are Democrats who say, well, the samples are too small among minority voters. And they are small, you know. But like, when you kind of look at the totality of it, something is happening. And I think it would be a mistake for Democrats to kind of basically say that everything is fine. Because as I said, even more important to me than the consistency across polls is the consistency within polls. It's not like this Trump gain is coming out of nowhere. It's also reflected in a lowered approval rating and higher disapproval rating for Biden than Democratic presidents usually experience among Black and Hispanic voters. And especially, above all, you know, discontent over the economy. You know, voters who are living at the median income or below have a very different experience with inflation and the cumulative inflation than upper middle class voters, whatever their race. I mean, for someone who is a professional, inflation is annoying. They're not happy about it either, but it's not quite the existential threat that people of, you know, with dealing more paycheck to paycheck are facing. So again, it is not surprising to me that when you look at these different considerations, that Biden would be facing some potential erosion among minority voters. But to me, the question is whether we are really going to see Trump achieve the kind of breakthroughs that polls now show him making when these voters, at least in the contested states, learn a lot more than they know today about what he is saying and proposing on issues that affect them directly.
I want to get to that in a minute. But first, the next thing you found in your analysis is that there's a flip side to Trump's success among non-whites. Biden is actually doing surprisingly well among white voters. In the four national polls you analyzed, you found Biden getting from 30% to 34% among white voters without a college degree, and 50 to 56% among white voters with a college degree. You find that this basically hits the numbers among both groups that he reached in 2020, when he won a sizable victory in the national popular vote, took back the three blue wall states in the Rust Belt and Northeast, Wisconsin, Michigan, and Pennsylvania, and flipped Arizona and Georgia, continuing to move the transition of the Sun Belt and Southwest in the Democratic direction. That's striking for an incumbent who's as unpopular as Biden, isn't it?
Yeah. No, Biden... You know, right now in polling, in a broad array of polling, including the four that you mentioned, the national polls, as well as the three that I cited that came out this week, and almost all of the swing state polls, with one prominent exception that I can think of, Biden is essentially matching his 2020 number among white voters when, as you point out, he won these places and he won the national popular vote. In some of these polls, he's down slightly among non-college whites, but I think less than you would have expected, given that they are also, you know, in that kind of vector where inflation is the biggest source of pressure. I mean, he's running. He got 32%, I think, of the national popular vote among non-college whites in the exit poll, and he's basically right there in most national polling. And there are multiple polls, both nationally and in the states, that have him doing even better than he did in 2020 among college-educated white voters. And that doesn't shock me in the sense that we can forget, because we've been living with it, but January 6th happened after the 2020 election. The Dobbs decision happened after the 2020 election. And these are issues that probably resound as powerfully with college-educated whites as with any other group. So it would not be shocking to me, even given inflation, even given the concerns about his age, which are not much different, you know, really anywhere in the electorate, it would not be shocking to me if Biden actually runs better among college-educated whites than he did last time, and offsets what may be some decline. I mean, it would seem with inflation, he should have some decline among non-college whites, but it's not nearly as big or as catastrophic as it could be. And when you add it all up, you know, Biden is consistently running. His overall number among all white voters is very close or even better than what he got in 2020. It was 41%. It was 41% in the exit poll, 43, I think, in the Pew validated voters. And he is basically right there in most of them.
I think it's worth underscoring this. Despite inflation, despite Biden's terrible approval numbers, despite high wrong track numbers, despite unhappiness with the economy, despite a lot of amnesia about Trump, and despite Biden's age, he's still in a decent place with white voters, including non-college white ones who might react particularly badly to inflation and the economy. And if memory serves, President Obama dipped further with white voters, didn't he?
And I'm not aware of any polling that any of these national polls that have him really slipping, you know, significantly. I think like even the New York Times Siena, which is often tough on non-college voters for Democrats, had him at 30% of non-college whites. Biden, so you know, almost unchanged from where he was in 2020. And that, you know, if Biden can do that. I mean, in some ways, I feel like the point of this story is that we might be looking through the wrong end of the telescope at what we are watching, which is it is understandable and justified that these numbers for Trump among non-white voters are getting a lot of attention. They should. It, as you said, it would be seismic if he can hold it all the way to November. But if Biden can hold the base that he had in 2020 among white voters, suddenly the decisive question in the election kind of flips. And the question becomes, can Trump sustain where he is among non-white voters, particularly in the key states, for 7 more months when they learn more about things like mass deportation, internment camps, military action against Mexico, defense of January 6th rioters? You know, on one of Trump's videos, he says cities should be required to implement stop and frisk policies to get any federal law enforcement money. Now, you know, stop and frisk was something that was widely viewed and ultimately stopped in New York as a policy that discriminated against young men of color. The share of voters who know that right now, the share of voters in Arizona and Nevada who know that Trump is talking about internment camps is minuscule. And it may be that these non-white voters are so disillusioned with Biden and so unhappy about the economy that it won't matter. But that is the proposition I think we're going to test. Again, if Biden just stays where he is today among white voters, the gains Trump is seeing among non-white voters go from a nice to have to a have to have.
I want to try to flip this point around and look at it a bit differently. What's surprising about all this data is its totality. Your basic argument, I think, is that given all that data, the bulk of Trump's strength against Biden right now resides in his inflated support among non-white voters, right?
The increment that has moved him from being behind in 2020 to being ahead in so many polls in 2024 is overwhelmingly concentrated in this improvement that we are seeing at this point among non-white voters, particularly non-college, particularly men.
Right. And so, if you're right about all this, here's where I think it leads. It seems more likely that Trump will ultimately lose some of that inflated support among non-whites than that Biden will drop further among whites once Trump is much more in the news, once voters grasp that he's really the GOP nominee, and once the Biden campaign's massive expenditures on communications start flowing. Is that a reasonable suggestion?
Yeah, that's absolutely the dynamic here, right? You know, you would say, I mean, to me, the core question is, if, as I said, if Biden can hold where he is among whites, can Trump hold where he is among non-whites? Now, 7 months is a long time to poll better among Black and Hispanic voters than Ronald Reagan and George W. Bush when you say immigrants are poisoning the blood of the country and you defend January 6th rioters who erected a gallows outside of the Capitol, which may be with a noose on it, which may be an especially resonant image for a lot of Black voters who are concerned about white supremacy. Now, I have not done the math state by state to say how much of the non-white support does Biden have to claw back in order to win. I do think, Greg, it is likely that Trump is going to perform better among non-white voters than he did in 2020, primarily because of inflation. I think he will do better. The question is he going to do as much better as he is now? I think if you're Biden, you'd rather have your deficit be based on people who have voted for you in the past defecting in the spring than if he was down to 27% among non-college whites, where it might be harder to win them back.
Yes. And I think in all this, you can kind of discern another side to the Trump effect and another side to the realignment thesis, such as it is, right? If it's true that Biden is unlikely to drop among whites, it's because Trump has already squeezed all the juice out of the non-college white vote that he can squeeze. And because Trump has so badly alienated educated whites, the suburban voters, especially women we talk about constantly, making it hard for him to put a dent in Biden's support among white voters.
Yeah, I mean, I think the variable would be whether Trump can find a way to push Biden down those two or three critical points from his level among non-college whites in 2020 to Hillary's in 2016. I think she was at 29 and he was at 32. That would be an opportunity for Trump. But as you say, you know, Biden is not Hillary Clinton. He has spent a lot of time and effort on creating blue collar jobs. I mean, every speech he gives, he talks about when every time he goes to these plants that are opening, and they are opening, you know, over $600 billion in private sector investment. I think new plant construction is contributing more to GDP than it has since the 1960s. You know, there are plants opening in Arizona and in Ohio and in Michigan. I mean, a lot of them are opening in red states. But when Biden goes there, he always talks about, in something that I as I've said, I never heard from Bill Clinton or Barack Obama, Joe Biden always talks about how many jobs he's creating that don't require a college degree. And he also talks at something I've never heard from any other president about how important it is to create jobs in small towns so kids don't have to move away for opportunity, right? Now, you know, he's not going to crack the cultural and economic discontent that is going to let Trump win, you know, something in the order north of 60%, close to two-thirds of non-college whites. But can he hold a third of them with those kinds of arguments and record? That's what he's showing right now. And if he does that, and as I said, he is in position, I would not be surprised at all if his college white number is better than it was in 2020, because January 6th and Dobbs had not happened by 2020. So you're in position to do slightly better among white voters overall, potentially. And as I said, the likelihood is that he's going to do at least slightly worse among non-white voters. And the question is that slightly worse, as bad as it looks today, or a lot better by November?
Right. And at the same time, Trump is kind of uniquely positioned to lose support among non-whites for all the reasons you said, right? Which is that he's got this long record of saying heinous racist things. But in addition to that, there's also the possibility that a lot of non-white voters, particularly young ones, the ones we talk about as drifting away from Biden, aren't paying close attention and aren't yet aware of or focused on some of those big liabilities, like the mass deportations, the promise to pardon the January 6th rioters. And by the way, we should mention the criminal charges here, which non-white voters take very seriously, according to the polls I've read.
Yeah, look, Biden's problems with younger non-white voters are real. I'm sure you've talked about them on other podcasts. As I say, there's an internal consistency to these findings of Trump making unprecedented inroads. But we are talking about a candidate who started his political career with the birther racist slur against Obama, who launched his presidential campaign talking about rapist Mexican, migrants as criminals and rapists, who now is saying that immigrants are poisoning the blood of the country and describing his opponents as vermin. As well as a policy suite of proposals which go beyond the immigration and criminal justice that we've been talking about. Repealing the ACA is a big thing in minority communities. And block grant, ending the Medicaid expansion and all of these things. He might run better among these voters than Bush, W. Bush, or Reagan, better than any Republican in 65 years, maybe. But it's an untested proposition because so few voters know much about this. And I think the groups that focus in these communities, are going to, by November, there are going to be a lot more Mexican-American voters in Arizona and Nevada that know that Donald Trump wants to undertake unilateral military action against Mexico than know that today. The Culinary Workers Union and the community groups are going to make sure that happens. So maybe it doesn't overcome their disappointment in Biden or feeling squeezed about inflation, but I've got to think it has some effect. And like I said, the question is, what is that point between where Trump is today and where he was in 2020, where Biden is still able to hold those states? Or more, even more, I think more to the point, is what is the point among Black voters in Michigan, Pennsylvania, and Wisconsin? Because that is, those are the states that are probably his clearest path to 270. And those are states where I think he is almost certain to run better among college whites than he did in 2020. States where voters have gone to great lengths to ensure that abortion remains legal. And I think they're going to be reluctant to vote for Trump on the grounds that he might supersede all of their efforts by banning abortion at the national level. So, you know, Biden can probably withstand some erosion in Black communities in those states, either in turnout or margin, but not as much as he's experiencing today. So that's really the question. Can he get that back to a point where improvement among college whites is enough to offset it?
I think that point about college whites explodes another narrative. There's a certain type of centrist pundit like James Carville who keeps telling us that Democrats' social liberalism and their overly permissive stance on immigration are alienating working class voters. Even if you accept that, your analysis raises a counterpoint, which is that Biden's support among educated whites is also critical to any winning Democratic coalition. And he has to keep up his support among that demographic, too. I think Michael Podhorzer has made a version of that. But what I take from it is the kind of analysis that says only working class voters matter is blinkered in a really critical way by your reading. His support among educated whites is also central to keeping his support among whites overall at levels that would enable Biden's coalition to prevail.
Right. You know, look, I give James a lot of credit because he was out there early when very few people wanted to acknowledge it, saying, hey, Democrats, you know, we've got problems in this election, right? That was kind of his message to Democrats. And I think he did kind of light a fire under a lot of people by pointing out the resistance that Biden is facing among key groups in the Democratic coalition. But you're right, basically. I mean, you know, there is the focus solely on some of the cultural issues that may alienate elements of working class communities across racial lines can obscure the fact that Republicans are out on an unsustainable limb on issues like abortion and gun control and book bans in white collar communities. And, you know, look at the margins that Gretchen Whitmer posted against a kind of MAGA type Republican in Oakland County and out in Ann Arbor and around Grand Rapids. I mean, they were crushing, you know, and Dane County. And I think it is entirely possible that unless Black turnout collapses or margins collapse entirely along the way that we're talking about, the Dane County, which is Madison, has moved Wisconsin away from being an exactly 50-50 state to putting a thumb on the scale for Democrats. Now, the one complication in this is that the immigration and crime issues that are probably the biggest problem for Democrats in blue-collar communities are not the offensive issues that are helping them in white-collar communities. There is too much hand-wringing that Democrats are out of alignment on cultural issues without acknowledging how much the Republican positions on things like abortion and gun control and now book bans are contributing to their decline in white-collar communities. But that doesn't mean that Democrats can't find a better balance on some of these other issues like immigration and crime that are really hurting them in blue-collar communities and are not really helping them where they are on them in white-collar places.
Right. And I think it's probably worth pointing out here that a lot of conservative pundits told us, and even some centrist liberal pundits as well, told us that the wokeness wars were a catastrophe for Democrats. Yeah. And that was really all based on Glenn Youngkin's single yep. victory in a Virginia governor's race, which is a state that is held in an off year and often goes to the party that is not in the White House. And then in Virginia in 2023, Democrats recaptured a bunch of territory that Youngkin had basically won on a message of fairly unabashed social liberalism.
Abortion and book bans trumped the Republican culture war issues to a, you know, not completely. I mean, you know, as you know, the Democratic margins in those places were down below what they were, but they still won. It is highly unlikely that on election day, more people are going to say they trust Biden than Trump on the economy. I think Biden can improve his circumstance from where he is now by focusing on his achievements and focusing the debate also on Trump's intention to extend his tax cut for everybody versus Biden's alternative of using the money that would have gone to the top 5% for things like the child tax credit and ACA subsidies and child care help and so forth. Biden can reduce his deficit on the economy, but I don't think he's likely to close it entirely, which means that there are going to have to be, if Biden is going to win, there have to be people across racial lines who think that Trump is better for their bottom line, who vote against him anyway, because they view him as such a threat to their rights and their values and their interests. And ultimately, if Biden wins, it is going to be more on a cultural affinity democracy scale, I think, than on a, I'm on your side economic scale. The share of non-white voters who say that they were better off under Trump than Biden is higher than Biden can survive to lose. I mean, right? I mean, does that make sense? I mean, if every Black and Hispanic voter who said they were better off under Trump voted for Trump, it would be really hard for Biden to win. So that means he has to win them back on other grounds. And fortunately for him, Trump is giving him a lot of other grounds to win them back on.
Right. I mean, I think it's a broad suite of things. It's abortion, it's democracy, it's LGBTQ, it's guns, it's book bans, and white nationalism.
People ask me all the time, why isn't this hurting Trump? Why isn't that hurting Trump? Why are indictments hurting Trump? And I said, my answer is, it all is hurting Trump. Okay. What we saw in 2022 was an unprecedented number of voters who disapprove of Biden still voting for Democrats because they found the alternative unacceptable. And if you look at polls today, Biden is running what, 7-8 points often better in the horse race against Trump than he has in his own approval rating. You know, the Biden approval rating might be 38 and his vote against Trump might be 45 or 46. That's unprecedented for an incumbent. That's the measure of how much all of this stuff is hurting Trump, in that there are literally millions of people who are saying, I don't think Biden is doing a great job, or word, he's too old, but I'm going to vote for him anyway because Trump is unacceptable.
If you accept that it's more likely that Trump will deflate among non-whites than it is that Biden will sink among whites, then Trump's polling numbers right now mask what is clearly a weakness on his part.
Yeah, the way I'd phrase it is that his lead is now dependent on him doing something that no Republican has ever done, run in the mid-20s among Blacks and in the mid-40s among Hispanics. And when your lead depends on something that's never been done, it's inherently a little shaky. You might do it, and Biden might, you know, erode at least a little among whites. But at this point, Trump's lead depends on him doing something that's never been done, and that's always a little dicey.
And he's Donald Trump. Ron Brownstein, thanks for coming on with us today. It was a great discussion.
Thanks for having me.
You've been listening to The Daily Blast with me, your host, Greg Sargent. The Daily Blast is a New Republic podcast and is produced by Riley Fessler and the DSR Network.